Hello, I'm Micah. This is Book It. You're listening to KDVS Davis 90.3 FM. The following views presented in this half hour do not reflect the views of KDVS, KDVS sponsors, or the University of California. Like I said, this is Book It. We review books, talk about books. Warning, there's so many spoilers for every book that we talk about because you can't really review a book without talking about the summary or like summarizing it in a way. So if you aren't into spoilers, I would recommend not listening if you'd like. Today's book is All the Lovers in the Night by Mieko Kawakami. 2 weeks ago, I reviewed Mieko Kawakami's book, Heaven. I've become a really big fan of Mieko Kawakami. I've also read one of her other books, Miss Ice Sandwich, and I've half read of her like most famous book, Breasts and Eggs, which I will finish soon one day. But I think she's becoming one of my favorite authors. I really enjoy all of her books. She's a really amazing writer. She's awesome. What can I say? Today's book, All the Lovers in the Night, I think is a lot of people really, really love this book from what I've seen and read. Honestly, it's like on par with people's love for Breasts and Eggs, which is, like I said earlier, her most famous work. But people really, really love this book. I've seen people like talk about how it's like one of their favorite books of all time, stuff like that. I'm gonna be honest, I really like this book, but it's not my favorite Kawakami book. I think Heaven is still my favorite by her. I enjoyed that one a lot. It's probably one of my favorite books of all time. But I do think this is a great book, and I understand why people really, really love the book. I just think personally it wasn't my favorite, but I do think it's really good. Like, this is not me saying it's a bad book. I just think in terms of all her books, Heaven is my favorite. I think it goes Heaven, All the Lovers in the Night, Breasts and Eggs and All the Lovers in the Night kind of tied for me just because I haven't finished Breasts and Eggs. But from what I've read, it's really, really good. I think Miss Ice Sandwich is probably my least favorite. She has more books, but not all of them have been translated into English. And so I think those four are like the only ones that are translated. There might be one more. But from the four that are translated, that's kind of my ranking. Miss Ice Sandwich is a good book as well, but it's just super short, and it's not like amazing, I would say. Like, her other works are definitely way, way better. Today, All Lovers in the Night. This one is a really interesting book. So the main character, her name is Fuyoko. Well, it's Ire Ire Fuyoko? Fuyoko? She's our main character. She's a 34-year-old woman living in Tokyo. She's not married. She has no boyfriend, no nothing. It's just her. And she's a proofreader. When the book first begins, she works at a company where she basically proofreads books and looking for mistakes in books, things like that. And then she meets one of her fellow coworkers, Kyoko, I believe is her name. Refers her to another woman named Hirari? Let me see. What is her name? Hijari? Yeah, Hijari. She refers her to her. And basically, Hijari convinces her to, like, kind of do some freelance proofreading work on the side, like, as she's doing her job, just to bring in extra income, and because she's pretty good at her job. And so she decides to do this. But as she's doing this, when she's talking to Hijari kind of tells her that she should basically just go freelance and leave her job. Because freelance, she explains, is a lot better. She's able to work at home, and she, you know, just, it would be better, is what Hijari tries to convince her. And Fuyoko has never thought about this in her life. She kind of has just gone with the flow of things, like, her entire life. She mentions how she's never, like, the college she went to, she didn't choose it because she wanted to go there. It was what her teacher recommended. And she kind of explains throughout the book that, like, she's never chosen anything for herself. And so she kind of decides to go with what Hijari is telling her. And we also find out that she's kind of getting, not bullied, but her coworkers make fun of her, basically. Well, basically that's bullying. They kind of slightly bully her at her job because they think she's weird. And she doesn't really talk very much, and she doesn't hang out with any of them outside of work at all. And so they'll say kind of rude things to her and kind of talk about her behind her back. And she decides that if she was a freelancer, she wouldn't have to deal with this. So that's kind of why she chooses to become freelance proofreader instead. So she leaves her job, and she begins working at home, daily now. And it's just her, like I said. This whole book is kind of deals with loneliness. And like, Fuyoko is a really interesting character, because it's just her. There's not a single mention of her family in the book at all. They don't mention any parents. They don't mention her siblings. They don't mention anything. And it's just her. She's 34, like I said. She doesn't have kids. She's not married or anything. And truthfully, she doesn't have any friends. Her only, like, sort of friend is Hijari. Her, I guess, would it be her boss? I guess she's kind of sort of her boss in a way. Or she's an editor, I think. And so that's kind of like the only friend, quote unquote, that she has at the moment. As the book goes on, we meet some other people that she kind of knows. There's one of her old classmates from high school. Her name is Noriko. And then there's also the lady Kyoko, who kind of referred her to Hijari. But they're not really friends. They don't see each other ever. They never hang out. And her relationship with Noriko is even worse. They haven't seen each other in years. She gets postcards from her every now and then, but that's kind of about it. They don't hang out or whatever. The only person she kind of talks to on a daily basis is Hijari. Other than that, she's not hanging out with anybody. She's not really leaving her house. All she does is stay in her house and proofread books and sleep. The way Kawakami describes this is really depressing. You start to feel really, really bad for her. Because she explains why she doesn't have friends is kind of because she has a really hard time forming relationships with people. And you can tell just by the way, like, Kawakami describes her dialogue with Hijari. It's extremely awkward. Hijari is the one that does most of the talking, whether it's, like, on the phone about work or whatever. Or sometimes they'll meet up in person and they'll get like drinks or whatever. But most of the time it's Hijari talking about work or her personal life. And so Fuyoko's doesn't do any of the talking. And Hijari even mentions not knowing much about her at all because she doesn't talk. And when Hijari asks her questions about her life, she just sort of replies, "I don't know." And it's kind of like, you can understand why she doesn't really have any friends or anything, because she just has a hard time thinking for herself. And so it becomes like quite sad. And she starts to feel this. And one day she's like walking. I think she's like walking in the train station or something. And she sees her reflection. And she notes that she looks miserable and sad. And so this happens. Well, let me explain something first before I get into that. But as this is going on, she starts mentioning how much alcohol she's drinking. The beginning of the book, you don't really realize this because she mentions it like occasionally. But as the book goes on, you start to realize that she's drinking a really unhealthy amount of alcohol. She becomes an alcoholic throughout the book, and it gets worse and worse as the book goes on. She's drinking like a crazy amount. At first, it just starts with like a beer in the evening every now and then it kind of escalates to her drinking beer every morning, and then it escalates to her drinking beer in the mornings and then bringing around a thermos of sake with her everywhere she goes. And she notes that she can't function without drinking the alcohol, and she notes that it makes her feel like sort of normal, and she's not able to talk to people if she's not drunk. And this gets worse and worse as the book goes on, obviously. Notable scene is after she realizes that she looks miserable in her reflection, she decides that she wants to change her life and she wants to be better. She sees some lady giving out pamphlets for the cultural center where you can take classes on random things or whatever. She decides to go and she goes. And when she's there to sign up for class, she gets her number, sits down, and she takes out her thermos of sake and drinks a bunch of it. And this is like probably like around her peak alcohol alcoholism. And after she drinks all of this sake, she goes and she drinks coffee. And this becomes like, she'll end up regretting this later, because later on, as she's sitting there waiting for her number to get called, she feels really nauseous and she starts talking about that. And as her number's called, she starts to feel even worse and she knows that she's going to throw up. So she gets to the counter, leaves her bag there, and tells the lady, I need to go to the bathroom. And she runs to the bathroom, but she doesn't make it, and she ends up throwing up like in front of the bathroom. And as she's trying to run into the bathroom, she runs into a man, and she runs into him. She tries to apologize, but she's obviously throwing up and stuff, so she just runs into the bathroom, and she throws up. After that, she cleans up everything, she cleans the floor and everything like that. She cleans herself up, and then she goes back to the waiting area and notices that her bag is gone. So she tries to go up to the lady at the counter and talk to her and see where her bag went, but the lady just tells her to get a number. So she gets a number and she sits down and waits. And as she's sitting there, she kind of looks off and she notices that a man is staring at her. And she keeps staring at him too. Like, they keep just like staring at each other, like weirdly back and forth. And she realizes that that's the man that she ran into all the way to the bathroom. And she starts to wonder if he's staring at her because maybe she got throw up on him or something. And she starts to feel really bad about it. So she decides, she gets the courage to get up and speak to him. And so she does, and she talks to him. And she basically apologizes. And we find out that she didn't get throw up on him at all or anything. He was just kind of concerned for her. And so he asks her if she's okay or whatever. And she says, yeah, she's fine. And they kind of, that's kind of where it ends. And she goes and sits back down, she goes to sit back down, and she's sitting there waiting for her number to get called. She's obviously still very drunk. She falls asleep, in the waiting area on the couch. And then she wakes up 3 hours later. She doesn't fall asleep. She gets her bag from the lady at the counter. It turns out that she had put it back there, after they called her number up, and then she goes and sits back in the waiting, couch, and that's where she falls asleep, and then she wakes up 3 hours later to see that her tote bag is gone again, because she had it sitting by her side, so somebody stole the tote bag, and she doesn't know what to do, and as she's, like, sitting there, the man that from earlier comes out, and he speaks to her, and she tells him that her bag was stolen. And so she doesn't have a way of getting home because she brought her money with her, but she didn't bring like her cards or anything like that. And so he loans her 1,000 yen and she uses this to take the bus or the train home. And then she finds out she gets his contact info so she can repay him as well. And so fast forward a little bit, she contacts him and they meet up so she can repay him, and she does. And they go to a cafe and they kind of just talk to each other. And this relationship, his name is Mitsuka. Mitsutsuka. They meet up. This kind of like becomes like a weekly thing where they start meeting up, every Thursday. And then it becomes from every Thursday to every Thursday and Sunday. And so they keep meeting up every Thursday and Sunday at the cafe, and they just start talking about random things, mostly physics, because we find out he's a high school physics teacher, and so he will explain physics to her, and it's a really interesting, like, dynamic they have going, and every meeting that they have, she's incredibly drunk. She just keeps drinking more and more as the book goes on, like I said earlier, and every meeting, she's drunk, and it's really sad. And so as these meetings keep going on, he ends up gifting her a book, during one of these meetings, and she reads this book. It's all about light. And then they have more meetings, and he even gifts her a CD of, a Chopin, piece. I forget what the piece was called. She begins to listen to this all the time. She listens to it 24/7, except when she's showering. That's the only time she's not listening to this or sleeping. So she's constantly listening to the CD, and she begins to think about him all the time, Mitsuka. She thinks about him all the time. She's constantly thinking about him when she's drunk, things like that. And she kind of starts to realize that she's in love with him. But she doesn't know how to go about things. And this kind of, she kind of brings up her past, and this is kind of all we really know about her childhood or anything like that. But she brings up, something that happened to her in her senior year of high school. And we find out that in her senior year of high school, she was raped by one of her classmates who she thought was her friend. And it's really sad. And it's, I would honestly, this is kind of a trigger warning for the book because it's described like in graphic detail, kind of. And it's really, really sad. And so we find out this information about her, and this kind of explains a lot about her, why she has a hard time forming relationships, especially romantic relationships with other people. And we find out that that's the first and last time that she's ever, been intimate with a man. And this, you can tell it affects her entire life. And this is kind of where all her problems stem from. Because after that, she kind of changes as a person. And so that happens to her in high school, and obviously it's still affecting her, and she's 34 years old. And so she doesn't really know how to go about this. She doesn't know why she feels like this, but she's constantly thinking about him. And so for like a little while, she becomes extremely depressed, like worse than she already was. And it gets to a point where she stops meeting up with Mitsuka, in the cafe. Oh, and their last meeting, what prompts this is she goes on, she goes and meets up with Noriko, the one like friend that she has from high school who she hasn't seen in 15 years. But they've, you know, she sent her postcards, things like that. We find out that Noriko is married now, and has kids. And her meeting with Noriko is really weird. Noriko is talking to her about her married life. And she finds out that Noriko's husband is cheating on her, and Noriko is also cheating on her husband. But neither of them want to get divorced, and it's this really weird situation that's happening. And Noriko kind of describes her loneliness, to Fuyoko, and it's really interesting. And at, like, through this interaction, Fuyoko isn't really talking very much. It's mostly Noriko doing most of the work. And we kind of like learn that. Fuyoko kind of comes to an understanding that even though she's miserable by herself, people like Noriko who are married and have children, are still lonely and inadequate in their daily lives. And she kind of like doesn't want to have kids. She doesn't think about any of the things like that. And so after this meeting, it kind of leaves her in a weird way. She's like really like withdrawn and kind of depressed after this. And so she goes and she goes instinctually to the cafe that she always meets up with, Mitsuko at. And so she sees him there too. She doesn't expect to see him there, but she does see him there. And she talks to him and they go into the cafe or whatever. She's also not drunk, by the way. This is like the one day she's not drunk. As they're talking, so she confesses to him that every single time they've met, she's been extremely drunk. And that she basically admits that she's an alcoholic. And all he says is, "I know." And this kind of makes her feel weird. And she gets up and she leaves. And as she's leaving, she stops and turns around and notices that he doesn't come for her. And so she goes home, and this is where she becomes extremely, extremely depressed. She was already kind of sad before this, but it gets even worse, to the point where, like, she doesn't leave her house at all. She stops answering Hijari's phone calls. She doesn't go meet up with Mitsuko. She doesn't call him. She doesn't email him. She's cut all contact with everybody. And she even asked Hijari to scale down the work that she's being given. And it's a really, really sad part of the book. Until one day, she decides, or what happens? She basically, she meets up with, or she messages Mitsuko, I believe, because she just can't contain her feelings anymore. Every night she's having these weird dreams about him and also Hijari. They're really weird and I can't describe them on the air. And she decides that, like, she can't do it anymore. And so she messages him. They end up meeting up, and then they decide to meet up for his birthday. And she takes him to dinner, and during this, like, or after the birthday thing, everything is going really, really well. They also note how, like, pretty she looks, because she's wearing normal clothes, she's gotten dressed up, and she's wearing makeup. Mitsuko describes her as striking, and even, like, the other ladies are complimenting her, and so she's really pretty. But after this, after the dinner, they go out, and they're walking, I guess. And she's talking to him, and she confesses to him that she loves him, and she starts crying and crying. And she's, like, squeezing his hand, and he's not saying anything to her. And so, we're getting a caller, but I'm not gonna answer, I'm sorry. She's squeezing his hand as she's confessing her love to him. And she asks him for her birthday, can they meet up and, like, listen to the Chopin CD that he gave her, and talk about light and stuff, and they agree. That's, like, in the works or whatever. Fast forward to her birthday, we find out that Mitsuko never showed up. He never showed up. She never got to do anything with him for her birthday, and he stops contacting her. She goes to the cafe every day. He's never there. He basically disappears from her life until a couple weeks later, she gets a letter. And in this letter, he admits that he lied about being a physics teacher. And so she writes a letter back to him, but she realizes she doesn't have his real name, and she doesn't have an address for him. So we learn that, like, she basically doesn't know anything about him. Everything he told her probably could have been a lie, but he was never a physics teacher. It's really sad. And so after this, she kind of accepts this. And the book fast forwards to, like, 3 years or something, I think. Yeah, because she's 37 in the last chapter. And in this last chapter, Hijari is pregnant, and they've become really good friends as well. Oh, I also want to mention that after that night of his birthday dinner, she goes home. She meets Hijari in front of her house because she came to check on her. And they go inside, and they kind of argue a little bit. And Hijari says that every time, like, sometimes when she's with her, she gets mad. She uses a more vulgar word that I can't use. Fuyoko starts crying, and then Hijari starts apologizing to her, and they both start crying to each other, and it's a really, like, beautiful scene, because they basically, like, have become so close to each other without realizing, and, like, as they're both crying, they're, like, holding each other in their arms, like, laying next to each other, and they're both apologizing for hurting each other, and you kind of realize that, or this kind of, like, makes Fuyoko realize that she had a friend the entire time, she just didn't know it, and that this kind of, like, her relationship with Hijari and Mitsuko kind of makes her realize that she's capable and worthy of having relationships with other people, whether they be platonic or romantic. And so after the whole, like, Mitsuko not showing up for her birthday, and Hijari, she decides, or she goes on with her life. She starts to not think about Mitsuko anymore. Well, obviously that's still a part of her, but as she, like, gets older, she starts to think, like, that whole era with him was just something that she needed to get through, and that the pain that she experienced was something that she needed to experience in order to move on with her life and to grow. And it's a very, the book is very, but the book is kind of just describing her situation, and it's really, really sad. And so I feel like for me it was a little bit harder to read, just because it's, like, really, there's a lot of things in here that are really sad. There's some things that, like, when it describes her being raped, it's a really, like, hard, like, couple of pages to get through. But I think the book overall is very amazing. I completely understand why people, it's, like, a lot of people's favorite book of all time, or, like, their favorite Murakami, their favorite Kawakami book. Like I said, I think it's very beautiful in a very subtle way. I think Kawakami is an amazing author, and I think she does a really great job of describing, like, Fuyoko's loneliness and, like, what she's going through and her alcoholism. Oh, and also she stops drinking after the Mitsuko event, and him not showing up to her birthday. She completely stops drinking alcohol. And so we learn that she started to heal and her life has gotten so much better. And it's kind of like a bittersweet ending to the story. Her and Mitsuko don't end up together, but she does, like, become a better person, and her life does get better, which is very good, I think. But yeah, it's a, I don't know, I think, like I said, it's not my favorite Kawakami book, but I definitely understand why it's everybody's favorite Kawakami book. Like I said in the beginning of the show, Heaven is definitely my favorite. But I think, honestly, this might be a close second. Once I finish Breasts and Eggs, I can probably confirm whether or not. But I do really enjoy this book. And I think, I don't know, I'll read the first, like, there's a first, like, passage before the story even begins. And it kind of talks about light and stuff. I also want to say that light kind of represents, like, or has, like, a, is very important in this story. It kind of represents, or is a symbol of, like, beauty and peace in the story. And it's kind of, like, the opposite of, to Fyoko's depression. And it represents, like, the facets of herself that exist buried within or beyond the context of her depression. I probably wrote that. Anyways, I'll read the first, like, little passage that's in the beginning of the book before the show ends. Okay, it starts... Why does the night have to be so beautiful? As I walk through the night, I remember what Mitsuko said to me. Because at night, only half the world remains. I count the lights. All the lights of the night, the red light at the intersection, trembling as if wet, even though it isn't raining. Streetlight after streetlight, taillights trailing off into the distance, the soft glow from the windows, phones in the hands of people just arriving home, and people just about to go somewhere. Why is the night so beautiful? Why does it shine the way it does? Why is the night made up entirely of light? The music flows from the earphones, filling my ears, filling me. It becomes everything, a lullaby, a gorgeous piano lullaby. What a wonderful piece of music, it really is. It's my favorite piece by Chopin. Did you like it too, Fyoko? Yeah, it's like the night is breathing, like the sound of melted light. The light at night is special because the overwhelming light of day has left us, and the remaining half draws on everything it has to keep the world around us bright. You're right, Mitsuka. It isn't anything, but it's so beautiful that I could cry. Yeah, and I also want to add before the show ends here, that, where is it? I wrote something down. So after Mitsuko disappears, he kind of represents, like, a sort of light in her life. How do I explain this? Because light, it shines on an object for only a brief time in the night. And he kind of represents this false light shining at the end of the tunnel. And like I said, her whole, like, dynamic with Mitsuko and Hijari, they both kind of teach her that she's capable of forming relationships and that life is beautiful, and she talks about this towards the end of the book. But yeah, anyways, that was All the Lovers in the Night by Miyako Kawakami, one of my favorite authors. I love her a lot. Shout out, my goat. Yeah, anyways, book it for next quarter is going to be in the same time slot this time, but it's going to be alternating. So I think I might be back next week or the week after. And I'm not sure what the first book I'm going to read next week, or the first episode of Book It will be. So stay tuned for that. If you'd like, it's going to be a mystery, or a surprise, I guess. But yeah, anyways, this was Book It, and I'll catch you next week or the week after. Okay, bye.
Look out now, this is the Diz, Dizzy Gillespie that is, and let me give you some information. If you want to hear some good sounds, the sounds that's round, keep your radio tuned to KDVS in Davis, 90.3 on your FM dial. Look out. on. This is the Diz signing out.
Welcome to KDVS 90.3 FM in Davis. My name is Dr. Andy, and this is Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. Thanks very much for tuning in to your local campus and community radio station on a Wednesday afternoon, or whenever you listen to this radio show and podcast. I'm happy to have you here. And very excited that we are on Poetry Night Eve once again. Tomorrow's Poetry Night in the city of Davis. And we have two poets who will be performing. They are Tana Jean Welch and Tim Call from Sacramento, one of the driving forces behind the Sacramento Poetry Alliance. I will have Tim Call joining us at around 5:20 this afternoon, maybe 5:25. I hope you'll stick around for that interview. And then around 5:40, 5:45, we will hear from Eve Imagine. Eve Imagine is a longtime adjunct professor at Sacramento City College. She and her husband have just released a new book. She's a debut author. We're going to talk to her on the occasion of this publication. But we're going to start today by talking about the Davis Phoenix Coalition. It's an organization that fights hate and discrimination here in the city of Davis. They have an event coming up. We'll hear from Denise Hoffner and her colleague Saul. The two of them work at the Davis Phoenix Coalition and are outreach coordinators. They also help to coordinate the day-to-day business at the Davis Phoenix Coalition. We'll hear about this local nonprofit and about the event that they have coming up next week. So, Denise Hoffner and Saul, and then Tim Call, and then Eve Imagine. It's a jam-packed show, uniquely local, in support of the arts, and offbeat thinking. Just what you've come to expect. When you tune in on a Wednesday afternoon or whenever you listen to this show to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour, we'll be right back with our first guests.